this is a very strange story about David Bowie's ashes. David Bowie's son has had to take to the social media to disprove a rumor about David Bowie's ashes, and we have our own editor, rock and roll editor of the Rokonja with Anna DeVlantis, Howard Kramer, formerly of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And Howard.
Hey, Howard.
Yes, Ro.
I ask you this question. The story goes that at Burning Man, the rock and roll festival that all the stoners go to, that David Bowie's ashes were thrown in the air and dispersed. Is that true?
And that story was everywhere this weekend.
All I can say is it sounds like one of the most ridiculous rumors I've ever heard in my life.
So you didn't believe it even initially? Because it was widely
not
reported.
Not for a second. Not for a second. Bowie is far too controlled. He planned everything out. And he's far too discreet an individual to have done anything like that with his remains. I cannot imagine David Bowie being part and party to that activity.
Well, your instinct is right. His son had to say that Burning Man thing. This is what he tweeted out. What people will do and say for attention never ceases to amaze me. Not true. Kind of gross as well.
Yep.
Which
there you go.
Is absolutely right. Who would make that up?
Somebody who wants to manipulate the system and get a lot of attention. And they certainly did. And I don't think it reflects very well on Burning Man. I mean, they have their own issues, and they've had them for a number of years as they've grown. The people who attend it certainly are, and have attended it for years, love it. But that doesn't help them in terms of burnishing their image as a reputable thing. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that the people involved in Burning Man had nothing to do with that and was more an internet troll type thing.
Right. I hope so.
And apparently the reports quote the singer's godchild. And it's unclear who the godchild is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if and now they're saying that the godchild was saying that Iman, the widow, Bowie's widow, had cleared this activity. I can't see that either. As a matter of fact, she just was interviewed for the first time. It was Fashion Week last week in New York.
She emerged looking great and fielded questions about how it's. She's having mixed emotions. Obviously, she was very honest about how it.
How tough
been.
This has been. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very tough thing. I mean, cancer is an onerous disease. It's touched all of our lives in some way, shape, or form. And, sure, her husband handled it with a great deal of dignity, but loss is loss. Losing the one you love is not an easy thing. So, and again, he was a class act. He planned everything out. He knew what he was doing. That Burning Man thing is another erroneous story. Someone trying to get attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I feel better about that now. I mean,
greener pastures, gentlemen. Let's find something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, I just want to say that, that when you think about this year started off so rough in the rock and roll world with the death of David Bowie and then obviously Prince and so many others along the way here. But David Bowie is really one of those figures. Forget about the music. Forget about the art. Forget about all the stuff. Just 20th century figures that changed the world. And,
no question.
And when you have, certainly it's changed the artistry of music. And when you have things like this, it's just, and again, we live in this social media world and the high frequency data world, high frequency information world. And people do try to take the same sort of advantage that is taken in the financial world with data as they do with trading, as they do with information like this. And, to your point, Howard, it's disgusting. And people should be shamed for such behavior.
I want to make one point about it. We're going to be talking about David Bowie for 40 years after his death, just as we talk about Elvis Presley some 40 years after his death. He's one of the immortal performers. I mean, there's a lot of people who are massively popular who aren't even spoken of in any way, shape, or form at all now. You don't hear about him. Bowie will continue to be one of those people. For better or for worse, people are going to co-opt him, or his art. Certainly his art's going to continue to persevere, and new generations will discover him, and new people will go, this is the guy who's speaking to me, and that's great. But occasionally you're going to get a dope like this who does something stupid.
A dope. That's exactly right, Howard. Exactly right.
Good way to describe it.
Dope and dopes have ruined the rock and roll industry. All right, here we go. Bruce Springsteen. See what I did there? Bruce Springsteen is announcing they're going to be releasing his Born to Run book. It's a book about his career and obviously that a lot of it will center on the early days in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and all the things that happened to him there. And it appears that he's also going to be doing a tour where he's going to be sitting down and going to bookstores, Barnes and Nobles. Imagine this. I can't imagine. I mean,
cool.
That, you know, he did. What did he? He just did. He did five nights, as he will often do, at the end of this this tour. He was doing the river tour, right? Wasn't that what this was?
Yeah.
And he, I saw it in the early dates here in Chicago. There was he played five nights in New Jersey. He had to take one night off because they had a football conflict. In that night off, he came back, played the United Center here, and then he goes back to play. Played a Saturday night in New Jersey and a Monday night back in New Jersey. He's 66 years old, Howard. How is this possible?
How's it? He takes good care of himself. That's for certain. You look at the guy. Does he look like he's?
No,
look his age.
He looks great.
Not in the least. You know, he's done an amazing job. There's always a joke that people make that much money, kind of like wash themselves in money that preserves them really well.
Mm-hmm.
But that notwithstanding, he's always taking care of himself. Never had a drug problem. Obviously, the thing that's coming to light now is his admission that he's been battling with depression his whole life. And the interesting thing about this particular book is it's an autobiography. And Bruce is a rather talented prose writer, not really a songwriter, but a prose writer. And more so, this is the third book that he's either been involved with or gave approval. About 3 or 4 years ago, a guy named Peter Ames Carlin put out a biography of Bruce that Bruce had given a blessing to. And this guy actually interviewed Bruce's mother. About 15 years ago, Bruce did a book called Songs, which he talked about all the individual songs that he wrote and the records that they were on. So now this is like the next phase of him being very introspective and talking about his own work, which is something I didn't think he'd necessarily do at this point in his life. But you know, I guess he got the bug and he went for it. But to your point, he's going to be appearing at Barnes & Noble. He's going to be doing, I think, at the Free Library of Philadelphia, a sit-down conversation. I guess, you know, it's working on a plane and going to these things if you can get the very limited tickets that are available.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Mostly New Jersey, New York. Seems like East Coast and West Coast.
Yes,
several dates in California and Oregon and Washington. Seattle, he's going to
be. Yeah, I expected Chicago to be on that.
I would too.
That's
you know what? Can I tell you something interesting about Chicago and him? Because you go back and you look at the pantheon here. You just look at the oeuvre of work. It's remarkable what he has done, and the lack of degradation in his arc, in his artistic arc, right? I mean, you start with the early albums, and specifically Born to Run, which is one of the greatest albums of all times, and you stop and you think to yourself, my God, this is a kid who's writing this, is 23 years old or whatever he was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, it's like that thing with the Beatles. So you're like, who has the soul to write that?
At that age. Or any age,
right?
But that age in particular.
It is just amazing. When you go back to that is, and the artistry and the masterful musicianship on that album, and everything that goes on there, and then you take it all the way up, and his work this weekend, especially, this is one of those weekends where you want to pull out The Rising, his album tribute to September 11th, and you listen to that, and you see that the incredible stuff that he did there, and then you see how great he still is in concert, and he's still prolific. He puts out work, and I cannot say enough good things about him in terms of his impact. But in Chicago, you talk to program directors of classic rock stations where they play high test classic rock music, and he does not test well in Chicago.
What? I know so many Bruce Springsteen fans.
It's crazy.
Or it's a tomb. I mean, that's interesting. Like, I wonder who does test so well that they don't play him because.
Mellencamp.
This is one of the big cities.
Mellencamp.
Well, Mellencamp's an Indiana boy.
Indiana, I get that. Yeah. Okay, almost homegrown guy.
Uh-huh.
What about Cheap Trick and the Elvis Brothers? Are they test well?
Well, Cheap Trick does, because again, we tend to be very provincial here with that.
Yeah, and that's true of every place. I mean, you hear Michael Stanley on the radio in Cleveland. You hear an incredible amount of Mitch Ryder and Bob Seger in Detroit.
Right.
That's just it's all depends.
Bob Seger, by the way, tests very well. I hate to get all like we should have a. Sure. Music programmer on here to talk about this, but
it's okay, man. I love that conversation.
But Seeger tests very, very well here, and as a matter of fact, so if you want to, Mellencamp and Seeger are the ones that supplant Springsteen, and you know, there are certain types of stations that are more curators of the music, so they're going to set it up differently for you, so that they're going to give you the importance of it. Every LIR in New York and XRT here in Chicago, places like that, have always been those kind of the classical music approach to music. But you talk to your standard classic hits kinds of stations that aren't going to set it up for you. They just want you to recognize the stuff. And there's another problem that Springsteen had too with radio play, not so much in New York or LA or San Francisco, but here, is that his songs are long. So you have to be able to figure out where you're going to put them.
Yeah. I mean, there's that. And then there's, you know, what developed, like you said, provincial, the Bruce Belt, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, Pittsburgh.
I-95.
Those are Philadelphia, exactly. The 95 corridor, or just a couple beyond that. Cleveland, even though it was a big city for him, wasn't as big as any of those. So, as time has gone on, he knows where the money is. His organization knows where the loyalty is. He goes to those and then goes to the other ones as necessary.
Just announced that he's going to be, again, part of the Stand Up for Heroes lineup. He's done it for years now. And Jerry Seinfeld, Jon Stewart also signed up for that, raises money for injured veterans and their families. So they raise a ton of cash.
That's good.
They do the right thing. You know, another thing about Bruce is his heart's always been in the right place.
He's put his money
where his mouth is, too.
That's true. He does have a tendency to get a little Bono-like on stage, though. You know, still a little story. You know, everybody's got to have some patter. You know, sort of like...
I've seen a lot of people say a lot less on stage and be less entertaining than
totally.
Oh, well, we talked about it when I saw Steely Dan, and the guy who's not is not Michael Fagan, the other guy.
Walter Becker, not Donald Fagan.
Right, Walter. I'm sorry, Donald Fagan. That guy, he goes on forever, and they're just bands just trying to play behind him. Like, what do we do now? It's not making any sense. All right. All right. Oh, and finally, I want to do this really, really quickly. Apple says that their AirPods, these new wireless earphones that they're selling with the iPhone 7.
Bluetooth, right?
Satisfy FCC requirements for close range radiation levels.
Isn't that crazy?
But a Berkeley scientist is warning that the AirPods might result in irreversible brain damage.
Well, yeah, as I sit here with a phone next to my head talking to you, I guess we all suffer the same thing. I mean, we are surrounded by radio waves constantly, and there is something to be said about the proximity. We really don't know. I was surprised when Apple took away the jack, but, you know, they had their reasons. I don't know if I want to wear Bluetooth Wi-Fi.
I just lose them. That's my problem. I mean, I don't – first of all, they remind me that eventually, because I've worked in – a business that requires me to wear headphones my whole life, I'm going to have hearing loss. That's number one. Number two is that I'm going to eventually have to wear hearing aids, which is going to depress me. And I don't want to practice right now with my music. I don't like the idea of sticking something in my ear that I could potentially, my dog could eat.
Right.
I don't even have a dog.
especially one that a Berkeley scientist said is microwave emitting, and you're putting it next to your brain. It's just when you start thinking, hearing those words, you're like, wait a minute.
Bad combination.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't like this, the way that sounds. But you're okay with it, Howard. It's just sort of.
Am I okay with it? I don't know. I'd approach it cautiously. But then again, you look at your iPhone or your smartphone and look at all the Wi-Fi in a particular area at any particular time. Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by stuff all the time.
I know.
You guys in a radio station, but just out here in the world, you can be sitting on the front of your house and you're surrounded by 13 Wi-Fis from your neighbors. So you pick your poison.
Howard, thank you very much. Howard Kramer is a writer, cultural historian, museum consultant, and former curator of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and now the editor-in-chief for rock and roll of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
a greater honor I'll never have. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Howard.